Welcome to the 442 podcast, where we dig into the biggest stories in football. I'm Connor Pope, and today we're going to be delving into the biggest and most important story of the week, and possibly the season. Two teams, 6 miles apart, 279 years of history between them, but one saved and one condemned. We'll be discussing Bury's expulsion from the Football League with Bury fan Tom Pickup, Bolton Wanderers' reprieve with 442 staff writer Chris Flanagan, and the wider context of this issue, as well as what other clubs could be at risk with football finance expert Kieran Maguire. We'll start, though, with Bury. Founded in 1885, they spent 17 years in the top flight in the early 1900s and hold the record for biggest FA Cup final win with a 6-0 victory over Derby County in 1903, a margin only matched by Pep Guardiola's Manchester City earlier this year. But on Tuesday, they were kicked out of the EFL. Tom, Chris, thanks for joining us. Tom, let's start by talking about the football club. How long have you been a Bury fan, and what has been the general trajectory of the club during that time?
Well, I have been coming since I was about 6 or 7 years old, probably the end of the 80s, when Bury had a bit of money then. We had Terry Robinson as the chairman, and my dad was actually on the board as a director. So I saw things firsthand. I got to meet the players. After the game, we went to get autographs from them. So I've been really involved almost, you know, from the day I can remember going down to Gig Lane. And throughout that time, I've seen so many ups and downs. We had our first problems when Hugh Eaves, who was the major financial backer up till the 90s, he was a stockbroker and he lost all his money on the stock market. We then eventually dropped down into the basement division again and subsequently went into administration in the early 2000s. All this time, though, the club was run by local businessmen, local Bury fans, and there was absolutely no outside involvement. So even though we had really near misses in terms of winding up orders and threats that we were going to go out of business, we didn't, thankfully. We survived. We grew again then, of course, in the Stan Turnant era, which is the most successful era in my lifetime, when from 95 to 97, we had back-to-back promotions all the way up to the Championship. And you can't imagine Bury in the Championship these days. It seems like a long time ago, but it was pinch-yourself stuff then. And we competed, stayed up, until Stan Turnant the following summer went to Burnley. And we then had Neil Warnock. And, you know, I won't go into all that, but that was a bad period for the club. We went back down the leagues. And then that's when we went into administration. I think it was 2002, 2003. But we were sort of just about surviving. We had a great input from a guy called Mark Catlin, who's actually one of the directors on our chief executive at Portsmouth, who pretty much kept the club going through real financial diligence, a little bit of money, and we were able to, in the Alan Neil, Richie Barker era, go right back up. And I think we may well have gone all the way back to the Championship, but then another dreadful appointment with Kevin Blackwell, and that scuppered everything. The money situation caught up with us when Mark Catlin left. And then, of course, this Stuart Day took over. Now, the Stuart Day era, I think, has been the most disastrous and the main reason why we're in the predicament we're in today. He came much heralded with all this money, but it was more the off-the-field stuff which he sort of stopped. He basically didn't involve the fans in any decision-making process. My dad was no longer a director by that time, but he was an honorary vice chairman. He was stripped of that title, and he was given absolutely no hospitality when he'd effectively been given, you know, free passes for life for what he'd done to help the club in the 80s. So that was very hurtful for our family. But as a fan, you were worrying that all this money that was being spent on wages, you know, we've had players as recently as Jermaine Beckford, we've had James Vaughan, loads of these people. Leon Clark is another one who we don't think somehow we could afford them, given our wage structure and our crowds and all that. So at the back of your mind, you're thinking this is going to catch up on us. Then you hear rumours, of course, of the mortgages that are being put on the ground with these astronomical interest rates. And you think somehow this is going to end badly. After, you know, we had the promotion with David Flitcroft, which was excellent, on a big budget. But then the disastrous season, not last one, the one before, when we finished bottom with all these big earners, people like Harry Bunn, who came from Huddersfield, who were in the Premier League then, we thought this could be the end and will Stuart Day still run the ship? Of course, he kept a back seat until last November when we started the season brilliantly under Ryan Lowe to get back up into League One. But then you hear just rumours at the club, nothing was announced, that he'd sold for a pound to this Steve Dale. Now, again, no one really knew who he was at the time. And this is where another one of the issues comes in. How did the EFL allow him to take over Bury without having a proper test? They say they've done everything within the rules, but these rules to me either seem a bit too flexible or they need revision, because we know what happened then. He has consistently failed to pay players. He came in saying he would solve everything and that although he's not made of money, everyone will be paid. That was his main thing. And of course, that didn't happen. The cliche came out, oh, it's much worse than we thought, which I'm sure many people say that, don't they? But if he'd have done the due diligence on the club, he would have known that. The simple answer is he's been trying to keep the club, not spend anything, until he got the CVA, which he keeps saying is how he saved the club. And when we got the CVA, of course, that means we only have to pay 25p in the pound back to these investors. So that means local businesses miss out as a result of the financial mismanagement. But we thought it was enough to survive because the High Court were really satisfied with the way that the HMRC and others would be paid. So the winding up petition was dismissed. But then you've got their own entity, the EFL, whose rules have to be abided by, and he couldn't show proof of funds and never has. So even though all these last minute attempts for a takeover have been ongoing negotiations, it didn't matter unless Steve Dale was willing to be selling the club. And it was only, I think, in the 5 days before the deadline, which has been postponed several times, did he say, yes, OK, I'll sell the club. And by that time, it was too late. And that's why we're in the situation we're in. It's been a complete disaster. Lots of things have made us come to this situation. It could have been avoided at any time. And I really am upset with particularly Stuart Day, Steve Dale and the league.
Can I ask just about the fans? I mean, obviously, Bury is quite a small town. It's not particularly affluent, but the club itself has been in the Football League for 125 years now. Are the fans ambitious and do they turn on managers quickly generally? Do they want to see Bury kind of much higher up the football chain?
Yeah, Bury is a small town. I think it's about 190,000 people. And the football club is a big part of the community. We may only get 3,000 to 4,000 a week, but the people who do come are very loyal. And you see the same faces week in, week out. Now, when you have someone like Stuart Day who's parading the money and saying, we can get in the Championship in 5 years, that did tend to put the fans in a position where they were expecting a great deal. And that creates that atmosphere of, if anything, other than promotion is a failure. I think up until then, the fans are always trying to be positive, but the diehard fans, I think they'd be quite happy for the club to be in Leagues 1, League 2, that kind of level, without overreaching themselves and just having a solid, stable foundation, given the previous financial problems of the 80s and the 90s.
Obviously, you were there the night that Bury got promoted last season. What did that feel like at the time? And how do you kind of reflect on that night now, knowing obviously what's happened since?
Yeah, that night I was actually helping commentate for Tower FM, which is a local radio station. So I wasn't with the Bury fans, but I could just see that mass of white shirts behind the goal. And it was a brilliant night. We were nervous before the game because we'd gone on a bit of a bad run when the news that people weren't being paid came out. So we were under pressure. We knew that a draw was enough because the other teams didn't want it either. They kept losing. So you were tense, but at the same time, you were like, well, whatever happens, we're in a bit of a mess financially, but let's just go up. Let's really enjoy this for what it is. This is football. And if we go up, you're thinking we've got more money, you know. We're a much more attractive proposition if we can get sold. So the game itself was very tense. To be honest, in the second half, when it was 1-1, neither side particularly looked like scoring again. So it was just amazing. I got to go on the pitch when the final whistle went and sort of meet the players, hug them and celebrate with them for ages after the final whistle. So it was a euphoric moment. But yeah, at the back of your mind, it's tinged with that worry that this is brilliant. We've done what we set out to do. Ryan Lowe and the players are heroes. But how long is this going to be sustainable? I have to be honest, I was never thinking this is the last match I'm going to see. But the longer it's gone on over the summer, we've had ages to try and sort this. And then it's the suspension of the matches that made you think, hang on, this could actually go really badly wrong.
What were your emotions when it became clear that they wouldn't be allowed to start the season with the fixtures?
Astonished, really, because I never heard of this happening until late last season with Bolton. And that was a couple of games, one of which they managed to play. So I was just presuming after the first one was suspended that hopefully there's some kind of technicality where someone like Steve Dale, okay, maybe he isn't all he says and he doesn't have this money. Surely he's going to find someone or some way of getting some funds, because it's just unthinkable, isn't it, that a situation be that bad where the players are there, albeit, you know, there are a lot of free signings because everybody pretty much was released in the summer. You think we're ready to go. We played friendlies. So it must be very serious if the EFL is stopping you from playing football games. So that was desperate stuff when I first heard that. And then week by week, you're just checking your phone and for updates, have they approved the next game? And as each one's gone on, you just feel more and more depressed and less hopeful for a solution to it.
And can you tell me about obviously Tuesday night and how you found out and what how you felt at that moment?
Yeah, well, what a day. I mean, to start with, we'd had that reprieve on the Friday evening. There were people at Gig Lane celebrating with champagne because this takeover was going to be allowed to go over the line, we thought. But then, of course, we just needed the deal to be completed by the Tuesday because we had the bank holiday weekend. So by, I think it was 3 p.m. In the afternoon on Tuesday, I was at court on my other job as a lawyer. And the news came in that this bid by CNN Sporting Risk, the bidders had pulled out, and my heart just sank because I knew the only reason the EFL had extended deadlines to allow this deal to get over the line, it wasn't for anyone to sort of buy the club and show proof of funds. It was really to get the paperwork sorted. And that was awful. And then, of course, just before the deadline, you hear about a lot of other offers that have come in. But you never know with Steve Dale. He's been so uncooperative. He's not listened to anyone until the last moment. So you just can't believe that this is here. We have lots of people offering to buy the club and save us. But because of this guy and because of the late schedule, we just couldn't get it through the line. So I was hoping maybe because of these last minute bids, there'd be an announcement from the EFL on the Tuesday saying we've given Berry an extraordinary, I don't know, until the end of tomorrow. Just to try and get anything through out of sympathy, if anything else. But just to issue a statement like that, about three or four paragraphs after 134 years, Berry expelled. My brother, actually, Matthew, who'd been going to the games with for 30 years, he texted we've got a family WhatsApp group, Berry expelled. And I was close to tears. I just couldn't believe it. I still can't quite believe it. And I think it's almost like a death in the family. I think there's various stages to it, and I'm still in the shock stage. I've not managed to grieve yet.
Obviously, there's lots of talk still at the moment about appeals and possible ways out of this. But if the worst does happen and Bury just stops existing, would you look to support a Phoenix club if a new club was set up?
Yeah, I mean, if this is it, definitely we are expelled from the league. We'd have to start again in Northern League anyway, but I think the first thing to do is we can't have Steve Dale still owning the club. Now, if the CVA, I think, relied on us being in the league, that perhaps would go out and that would mean liquidation would be a possibility, which sounds dreadful, but that would get it out of this guy's hands and we could start again. A lot of goodwill has been in the media and a lot of attention turned to Berry, a lot of offers to buy the club. You'd hope that interest is still there if we do form a Phoenix club. Or start again at a lower level. I don't think Berry FC is going to die with this decision, but it's a massive setback. I mean, even if we manage to get a club together for next season. It could be at Northwest Counties level, something like that. And it could be another 10 years at least before we get back into the Football League. So just it's just sad for, say, my nephew who wanted to go to the Bury games, and now he's not going to be able to see his club back in the Football League unless something changes until he's an adult, which is really, really sad.
And obviously, the Bolton and Bury situations have been kind of running alongside each other for, well, quite a while now. Did it make it harder seeing, obviously, Bolton have survived now, and obviously for Bury that you'd wish that was going to be the outcome for yourselves?
Yeah, it's that weird one where, say, you and your mate were going for the same job and your mate gets it, you're pleased for him, but really, you're really sad that you didn't get it. It's great news for Bolton. I always pictured that they'd be fine despite how dreadful their situation looks, just simply because they're a big club and you cannot picture it. You can't picture someone who's in the Premier League 12 years ago from going under. It's just unthinkable. And I'm glad for them. And I've got a lot of friends, of course, who are Bolton fans. So I am pleased for them. No one wants to see any club go out of business. And I think that's part of the argument. I thought if the league have allowed them to have the time necessary for this, and theirs has been going on for longer, surely this might make them rethink the decision if there is any scope for appeal or anything like that. Because it can't be that for the sake of 24 hours, one team is expelled and one isn't. Now, I know they haven't, I think they've only suspended one game so far, but there's still time to complete some of these fixtures. The other thing I'd say is surely there's a way of another solution would be very relegated and start life next season in League Two. There must be other solutions to simply expelling. But no, I'm pleased for Bolton. And I hope that they can continue. The fans have been actually quite supportive of all of this because we've been going through these hard times together.
Yeah, because I mean, obviously the EFL allowed Bolton to start the season. They didn't allow Bury. How do you kind of view the EFL's overall role in this whole situation for Bury?
Well, at first I was annoyed that they were doing that with the games. But at the back of your mind, you're thinking, are they doing this because they know Steve Dale is up to no good and they're trying to help Bury get rid of him? And so if they make it as dire as this, surely he's going to relent and somebody else is going to come in. That's what I thought they were trying to do. And therefore, that's what I thought they would extend the deadlines, because they knew that if we had a proper owner, we'd be good to go and then carry on as before. But no, I've got to say, you know, this much publicised fit and proper person test, they say only applies for proof of funds. It doesn't apply when someone's taking over the club. I think Stuart Dane, Steve Dale just simply went to the office in Preston one afternoon, signed a few forms, had a check on whether he'd got any criminal convictions or previous directorships, and that was it. It's that simple. And you're talking about a 134-year-old club, which is part of the Football League. We've never been relegated. I think we're the only team who've scored 1,000 goals in each division. So we're a massive part of this country's footballing history. Mm-hmm. Two-time FA Cup winners, you could go on. So just to make it that easy for someone like him to take over is a very dodgy rule. It needs to be changed. And if you're the EFL, you can't be thinking, oh, this has been awful for Bury. Our rules aren't good enough. We need to change them. You've got to be thinking, we need to change them so that Bury can survive. That's what you need to be thinking. It can't be that their own rules have ruined it for Bury, because they're the gatekeepers of football in this country. They should be doing everything they can to save it from people like Steve Dale and keep us playing.
Absolutely. Tom, I can't imagine what you've been through this week, but thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you very much. Cheers.
Chris, let's turn our attention now to Bolton. Obviously, thankfully got saved this week with a sale. But before we do that, I just want to ask your opinion as a, you know, Bolton and Bury are big rivals. How do you feel as a Bolton fan about what's happened to Bury this week?
I mean, just unbelievably sad. I mean, like you say, Bolton and Bury have historically been rivals for as long as I've followed Bolton Wanderers. But it would have never been in this situation where both clubs, their entire futures are in doubt. I'm sure any football fan would say the same. You may have rivals, but you'd never wish that club to go out, to go out of the Football League like in these circumstances. And obviously, growing up in that area, I know a lot of Bury fans, and it's just so sad that you saw the images on TV the other night of how devastated they were. One, you're thinking, well, that was so close to being Bolton, and two, you're thinking, well, it's just so terrible that any set of fans could ever be left in that situation where you've got no football for the rest of the season. And what happens then?
But leaving that aside, how are Bolton fans feeling after Wednesday's takeover?
Very, very relieved from a Bolton point of view. Like I say, it is very much tempered with the respect for what has happened with Bury, but very relieved because our 14 day notice had been served by the Football League that had things gone awry. We could have been out in 2 weeks. This takeover at Bolton had been going on since the club went into administration in May. It's been on the cards, but it had dragged on and on and on with about five or six different parties involved with credits and stuff like that that couldn't agree, that there's a lot of bad blood between various people because of what had happened over the last two or three years. So it made doing a deal very difficult. And you always worried that as long as those enmities existed, whether it could end up like Bury had ended up where there's no resolution. So thankfully, there's just a lot of relief now that hopefully the Bolton Wanderers can start to move forward again.
But obviously, the sale's gone through, but you're still minus 11 points in the league, and you have, four or five senior players at the moment. So this looks like the start of a saving process rather than the end of one.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, there's a long, long way back. I mean, I remember I travelled all around Europe watching Bolton in the UEFA Cup, and you think back to those days and think even if Bolton did everything right now, how long would it take to get back to that sort of season? Probably it won't happen, but it's just that the difference between where they were then and where we are now, it's huge. And there's no manager. A lot of players are going to need coming in now because they've been playing with kids for the last few weeks, and the kids, did a remarkable job at first and gave their absolute best, but they started to get tired, and the last three games conceded 15 goals. It's been really hard for everyone. So that, in terms of, yes, the 12-point deduction means they're way behind in terms of any chance of staying up this season, and just rebuilding almost every aspect of the football club needs rebuilding because none of the bills are being paid for months, and there are so many problems that have come because of that. Throughout the whole structure of the club shop, the kit, it goes way beyond just the football team.
And so, why are Bolton currently on minus 11 points? And I know you've been banging on for ages that it could be, there could be further reductions down the line. Is that still a possibility?
As far as we know, yeah. The EFL still haven't said what was going to happen regarding the Brentford game that the players were on strike for at the end of last season. There was talk that they could well get a deduction for that, but still not even had a hearing for that. And that happened in, I think, late April. We had no indication what's going to happen with that, whether there's going to be a deduction for that. Obviously, since then, in the last couple of weeks, Bolton were forced to call off the Doncaster game because of the kids' welfare and not wanting to put them into too many games in the space of a week. So again, could there be deductions there? But at the same time, it's a tricky one because for the league itself, and you can see the point of the view of all the other clubs, that they will think, well, there needs to be a deduction as a deterrent for this. But also from the EFL's point of view, they've been involved in this, in that the things they did over the last 12 months, even if not intentionally, I'm sure not intentionally, but have led to this situation. So how hard can they actually go on Bolton, given that they've had a role in all this and what's happened?
As you say, the club have been forced to field a team of children, essentially, in recent weeks. There was one, frankly, heroic 0-0 draw with Coventry, but the last two games have been 5-0 defeats. What has that been like as a fan watching kids play?
Very, very strange. I went up to the Ipswich game on Saturday, and it just felt completely inevitable. You could tell that the kids were exhausted by that stage and weren't really capable of, they were still trying their absolute best, but weren't really capable of competing with Ipswich at that game. And it was just a case of how many goals was it going to be? It was five with about 20 minutes left. It could have got to seven or eight if they'd have carried on. And it was basically, I spent the last 10 minutes of that game virtually watching second by second, waiting for the final whistle, which I've never felt like that before at a Bolton game. And it was just, please, just end this game.
Back in May, the former Watford owner, Lawrence Bassini, almost bought the club. What were the feelings like at that point? Was there disappointment that the sale hadn't gone through?
I think initially when he first came in, fans were kind of thinking, well, anyone but Ken Anderson. So even, you know, Watford fans were warning us, you know, things didn't work out well at Watford. You might not want to have this guy as your own club. But I think even at that point, Bolton fans were saying, well, you know, he can't be any worse than Ken Anderson, surely. But obviously a lot of weird things happened in that month or so before he went into administration, where he tried to buy the club, didn't show proof of funds to the AFL, or at least the AFL have said that, he's disputing that, but the AFL have said that he didn't show proof of funds. He went on Sky Sports, he went into the studio at Sky Sports holding up a shirt with his name on it and kind of insisting that, because this was the night before the Brentford game that got called off, insisting, I will make sure that this game tomorrow won't get called off. And what happened? He got called off. So I think he lost any credibility at that stage, and the fans just said, well, you know what, you know, we can't really, if you can't get this game on, and he just made himself look like a fool, then we kind of thought, well, can we really trust him to save the club at this point? Even if he's trying his best, which it did seem like he was generally trying his best, but did he seem like the sort of guy you could rely on and would definitely sort this out? Well, fans had their doubts. And I think from that point onwards, it was sort of a relief when that takeover fell through. You're thinking, well, even administration, you know, it was possibly a better option and get a different owner in. And he's still been, over the last couple of months, still been trying to force his way back into the deal. But I think at that point, almost all the fans are saying, please just stop, Lawrence. You know, we've got Football Ventures who are trying to buy the club. Let's go with them and leave it at that.
We just heard from Tom, understandably furious about some of the actions of the EFL during this process. How do you think that the Football League has handled Bolton's case?
Very badly. There's no doubt about that. I mean, I think This situation that's happened with Bolton, and particularly now with Barry, is Sean Harvey's legacy at the EFL. It's sad to say that, but that the fact that what a club has now finally gone for the first time in almost 30 years, that is his legacy.
Yeah.
Because Debbie Jevons is obviously in charge now, but she's inherited all this and had to try and somehow clear this mess up. Sean Harvey allowed Ken Anderson to come in and take over the club. Even February, March this year, he was insisting that Ken Anderson had, you know, people in time would be grateful for what Ken Anderson had done for the club, and that Bolton definitely had the funds to last the end of the season, which, as turned out with players not getting paid and the match being cancelled against Brentford, then that obviously wasn't the case. So he backed Ken Anderson way too much, and that exacerbated the situation. And, you know, I'm sure he was probably trying to do his best for the situation, but he just handled it so badly, and it led to us nearly going out of business. And as Tom was saying, the things that EFL could have done a lot better with Barry, with how Steve Dale took over as well, and it's led to them going out of the Football League.
Back to the on-field matters. Phil Parkinson, the manager, he left Bolton last week. What do you make of that? I kind of get the feeling that I guess from the outside, it's slightly confusing to see, because it's not like this was a new financial difficulty at Bolton. So why did he hang around so long?
Well, I got the impression from his media interviews that he didn't want to leave the club in the lurch while it was still in chaos, that he wanted to help this young team and just kind of see it through, and that maybe he would still be considering, once the takeover came through, that he would step down at that point, just because, you know, it's obviously been a hugely stressful 3 years for him, and he was sort of hinting that he'd probably had enough. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, the new owners did really want to keep him, from all accounts. So it has to be said that with Bolton getting relegated last season, the fan base were split on him last season, right, because of the style of football and the results. I personally would have kept him anyway, because if you want a manager in League One to sort out a mess and get a team together, he's about as good as... If he hadn't been manager of Bolton now, he'd be the person that you'd go straight to if he was available to appoint.
Is there any chance he'd come back, do you think?
I don't think so, from what he's said since.
Right.
I get the impression he just needed a break.
Yeah, I can imagine.
It's been so incredibly... I mean, it's been stressful for the fans. It must have been 10 times worse for him being in the middle of it.
No. I mean, finally... I mean, what now? Like, this one problem, which obviously was existential, has been forced away, but what happens to Bolton Wanderers now?
Well, the first thing they need to do is get players in, because, you know, we can't continue. I mean, it was clear on Saturday against Ipswich with the 5-0 that we couldn't ask those kids to play another game like that. Yeah. It wasn't fair on anyone. So they have to get players in. Obviously, the transfer deadline is imminent now. So that's the first priority. But there's just an awful lot of other situations at the club that just need putting back in place. We don't have a kit. We don't have a kit sponsor. Mm. The club shop, I went to the club shop on Saturday. It's pretty much barren. So we need to get, you know, just basics like that. And that's just two or three examples. I'm sure that spreads right through the club. Mm. The things that just need putting back in place. But the first thing is trying to get players in, and hopefully those players can at least give us a chance of staying up. Now it's a big ask at this point, but hopefully that can happen.
Well, Chris, I think like many people, I was delighted when the news came through on Wednesday evening about Bolton. Thank you for joining us, and thank you for talking it through with us.
No problem.
Like creating your own unique bets, the Betfred. With our Pick Your Punt builder, you can choose from thousands of combinations. How many corners, who'll score, and how. The best part is, you get your odds instantly. Unique bets and instant odds with Betfred's Pick Your Punt builder. Available online and on the Betfred app. Whenever you bet, Betfred. 18 plus T's and C's apply. Selected events only. Markets made available at Betfred's discretion. BeGambleAware.org. Set your limits. When fun stops, stop.
It's Dr. Rupi from the Doctor's Kitchen podcast. Now, I used to have a real issue with Wi-Fi in my flat, particularly in my kitchen, which is a bit of a dead spot. And that's an issue for me because I upload live videos to Instagram and Facebook showing people how to cook. But since I've started using this Wi-Fi disc from BT, I've now got Wi-Fi in every corner of my flat. Now, my live streaming is uninterrupted and I can even watch other people's recipes by streaming whilst I'm cooking in my own kitchen. If you want to find out a bit about how you can improve your Wi-Fi at home, check out BT Complete Wi-Fi.
Welcome to the newscast from Acast, the home of the world's best podcasts. I'm Acast Vicky Dubeck. This week is a London Podcast Festival special, a two-weekend celebration of the biggest and best podcasts, where you can watch live podcast recordings, meet the podcasters, and even find your new favourite podcast. All the action starts on 6th of September, so here's a few shows to look out for. On opening night, it's Have You Heard George's Podcast. George offers a unique mix of poetry, news, music and drama that really does make for an audio treat, so don't miss it. Also at the festival is the chance to catch a live show from one of the international podcasters, including Ireland's The Two Johnnies with their always hilarious comedy sketches, and New Zealand's Worst Idea of All Time, in which the hosts review the same movie every week for a whole year. Trust me, it's more fun than it sounds. And finally, a podcast masterclass for women is coming to the festival. If you want tips and tricks from experts on starting your own podcast and hear how the hosts of True Crime Pod, Red Handed, navigated their way to podcast success, look for A-Class Women on our Twitter at Acast and apply now. That's it, folks. Keep calm and pod on.
Now I'm joined by Kieran Maguire, who lectures on football finance at the University of Liverpool and runs the website priceoffootball.com. So Kieran, how come the likes of Ken Anderson and Steve Dale don't fall foul of the fit and proper person test as it is?
Well, as it is now called the owners and directors test, it is a box-ticking exercise, and the only people prevented from being an owner or a director of a football club is somebody who has an outstanding conviction or is banned from football in any other capacity. So therefore, 99.9% of the population would pass those particular tests.
Is it possible to fundamentally change it and make it not about that, tighten it up and kind of ensure that it is more difficult to become someone like this?
I think actually it would be very difficult to have watertight rules. Mm. Even if you have serial asset strippers such as Steve Dale, he's never done anything illegal. Mm. So therefore, on what grounds could you ban someone? I think what could perhaps happen is that should a new owner come into the game, then he or she is monitored to a far greater degree by the regulatory bodies.
Because we saw Lawrence Bassini, for instance, wanted to take over at Bolton despite his management at Watford. Is it basically just a case of, actually, that would be a very difficult way to define how you can stop someone becoming an owner, even if all the football fans turn around and go, this guy's clearly not going to run it well?
Absolutely. What you will find if the rules are tightened, there will still be loopholes, and anybody with a will to get around those rules will employ an accountant, a lawyer, an advisor, and they will make it very difficult for the EFL, and we'll end up with things going through courts, and it's all taking away from football, which is ultimately what we all want to focus on.
So it's difficult to change the rules as they currently stand, but how much can we say that the EFL are at fault for what has happened with Bury and Bolton?
Well, in respect of Bolton, Ken Anderson had been banned from being a company director in the UK for 8 years. Now, that should send a warning sign. If I'm recruiting, or if you're recruiting anybody for a particular job, you do a background check. If that individual does have a checkered history, then what you would do is put them in a probationary period where their activities are monitored, where perhaps any proposals they make have to be sanctioned and agreed by the EFL itself, and actually just make it difficult for them to be the owner or director. And if they're aware that's how difficult their role is going to be, the chances are that they're going to walk away. And therefore, whilst you don't need a test as such, you just make it difficult for them to act in the way that they have historically done so.
You've written about 442, about a salary cap this week. How would that help in a situation like this?
Well, I tried to assess a salary cap, and personally, I don't think it would be feasible. We do already have a salary cap in place in League One and League Two. Salary caps reinforce the status quo. If you have a large club with large resources, then it can afford to pay a higher rate of wages. So therefore, what's going to happen? Where is the next Manchester City going to come from? If you look at the success of Wolverhampton Wanderers, they've been funded by owners. They've spent a huge amount on wages in order to get out of the Championship. They were a delight to watch last season in the Premier League, and that was on the back of paying high wages. So is there a downside in respect of that? No. And is it good to have a challenge to the existing elite? I think the answer is yes. We wouldn't have a Manchester City or Chelsea had it not been for owners coming in and upping the wage bill significantly without worrying too much about the consequences, because they had the resources to do so. Wages aren't the problem. It's funding the wages which is the issue.
And certainly what I found from reading that piece was that actually looking at the way that wages in the Championship are structured, it seems that if you had a salary cap, barely any team would be able to meet it anyway, and it would have a pretty fundamental effect on the transfer market. But why are so many teams in financial trouble these days?
What has happened in recent years is that we have seen cost inflation, and wages are clearly the biggest cost for any football club. But what I think we've also seen is a new breed of owner who is very ambitious. And they come in and they run the football club for a few years with the intention of trying to get up to the Championship or the Premier League. And this was actually the reason why Bury's problems initially arose. You had Stuart Day, who was putting in £50,000 a week of his own money, except it was his company's money, into Bury to try to make the club successful and to get further up. And there are many people like Stuart. Now, when things go wrong with their personal business, that has a ripple effect in respect of the club itself.
And how many other clubs could be at risk?
In the lower leagues, I think that there's probably 8 to 10 in League One and League Two. I think also, as far as the Championship is concerned, we even saw clubs such as Reading miss their wage payments last year. It was only for a couple of days and it was only once. But this is normally a big red flag. It doesn't happen in other lines of business with the regularity that it does in football. So if you take a look at those clubs, and we're talking Morecambe, Macclesfield, Southend, Oxford and so on, I would be very concerned about their club's future, because that is indicative of a club which is living from hand to mouth. You only need something to go wrong for a week or two. So let's say that we get to January or February this year and we have a long cold spell, two or three home matches in a row are postponed, and that extra trickle of income that's coming in could be enough to tip clubs over the limit.
And finally, some people have speculated that part of the problem here is that there are simply too many professional clubs in England. Should some teams in the EFL consider perhaps going semi-professional to find a more sustainable economic model?
I'm totally against that. I think the a football club is so important to a town or city in terms of giving its identity. And the quality of football is important as well. Mm. I think it's not a case of having fewer fully professional clubs. I think what has to happen is that owners have to turn round to players and agents and simply refuse the wage demands which are being placed on them. You don't have to get promoted. You can still contribute significantly. If you look at the likes of Accrington with Andy Holt, who I think is a fantastic example of bringing a club up to a standard. But what he has done, he's engaged the whole community. Yeah. Myself and Andy had a bit of a Twitter fight when we first...
Andy Holt, surely not.
Exactly. And this was purely because Accrington have published their results, and I'm obsessed with detail and total transparency. And small clubs only have to produce cut-down versions of accounts. So I said, well, the club's done really well. It's broken even, but I can't say any more than that because that's all they've shown. Mm. Andy heard about this. He was straight on to me. He says, right, let's meet up. Went down the pub. Andy turns up with two carrier bags full of everything and says, you can write what you want. Here's it. You want transparency. And then he demanded that I write it all up and stick it up on the blog. And that's absolutely fantastic. The guy is a breath of fresh air.
Yeah, yeah.
You've got Mark and Nicola at Tranmere, exactly the same attitude. They are trying to use normal business behaviour and practice. But the problem with football in the lower leagues is that we've got too many owners who wouldn't run their own business in such a manner. But when it gets to football, they get giddy and they start making dumb decisions and they start making short-term gambles when ultimately, whilst I want my club to be promoted this season, in an ideal world, more than that, I want it to be in existence in 5 years and 10 years' time.
I think that was something really common that's come up with Bury fans this week, is that actually the idea that you want a sustainable future is much bigger than wanting short-term success. And when the offer comes down in such a stark choice, then it's really obvious which way fans want to go.
Yeah. And I've become sort of friends with a few Bury fans, you know, via social media, via sort of, you know, having the odd word on in TV and radio and so on. And you can tell their passion, but it's not Bury or Bolton, it's all of us. We all support our teams with the same degree of enthusiasm and passion and love. We know football is a crazy thing, but the existing rules of the EFL, they talk about, those rules are called profitability and sustainability rules. Well, they're nothing to do with profitability, and by God, they're nothing to do with sustainability either.
Kieran Maguire, thank you very much.
Thank you.
That's all we've got time for today. Remember, the season preview issue of 442 is in shops now. Pick it up for profiles of every league club, including on the financial woes at Bury and Bolton. If you want to read more in-depth coverage on this topic, head to 442.com, where Tom Pickup and Chris Flanagan have gone into more detail about Bury and Bolton respectively. Kieran Maguire has written about the possibility of a salary cap for EFL clubs, and Gary Parkinson has penned an incredible essay on what other English clubs can learn from the past few weeks. You can find links to those pieces in the show notes for this episode. There will also be more on the subject in the magazine over the coming months, so keep an eye out for that. The next issue of 442 magazine is on sale next Tuesday, 3rd of September, and includes a feature on the woes of another founding member of the Football League, Notts County. If you've enjoyed this episode, please do subscribe and give us a positive rating on iTunes. If you haven't enjoyed it, our Twitter handle is @442. I'm sure you can take it from there. Thanks for listening. Thanks again to Tom, Chris and Kieran for joining us today. The music you've heard is by Nathaniel Wyvern, licensed under Creative Commons.